This is the Screaming Pods Network on ScreamingPods.com.
And now, on with the program.
Hey everybody, welcome to The Pilot Project, welcome to 2019, and our very first guest is back with us today to talk about a very special show that is near and dear to all of our hearts. This is a show where we are a crack team of commandos who invade TV studios every week to uncover weird, lost, strange pilots or pilots from shows that ultimately failed. And the show we're going to talk about today, you wouldn't think is failed, but it really was a failure commercially. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Not as big of a failure as some things we've dealt with.
True. It's no Heil Honey, I'm Home.
Yeah, but exactly.
Anyways, that guy over there that was just talking, he's the Dominic Santini to my Stringfellow Hawk. And yes, he does masturbate a lot, but we'll get into that later. That is Dirty Dustin.
Heyo.
And our very first guest making a surprise return appearance today. We didn't know he was going to be here. He just showed up at my doorstep.
First guest for 2019.
That's right. First guest for 2019. He is the throwaway woman that shows up on episodes every week of action shows. He only wears white. He has no agency, and he works for the firm. It's Thomas the Tank.
Hello.
But he does have agency because he works for the firm.
Well, agency in an emotional sense.
That's true.
Not that he works for an agency. He has no
I think he's saying I'm not good enough to be an agent is what he was saying.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, no. I'm not saying you're not good enough to be an agent because they were all agents in the show we're about to talk about. You have no...
You're good enough to be an agent that actually takes over for another agent that just died but takes over the exact same role as the previous.
Exactly.
And, this is very complicated.
And you're all androgynous looking. You can't really tell one from the next. But today we're talking about Airwolf from 1984.
He does dance quite just as well as they do.
He showed up doing a dance on my doorstep.
Absolutely. That's why you let him in.
Just like,
is that not what you guys do after you ring a doorbell?
He was thrusting.
Pretty standard practice.
Thrusting on the doormat, dressed in that Red Castle outfit, just like the Lydian Airwolf.
He kicks on the banging Indian music in his headphones and just starts going to town out there.
I always have that handy, of course.
On his oversized jukebox.
Exactly.
Just keep making jokes that nobody else understands.
True.
We might have a break room listener, too. Yeah, you never know.
I think Nate listens to this disaster. Airwolf, 1984, and it is known for many things.
A helicopter.
It has a significant place in TV history. I think it's probably besides the helicopter, of course, the theme song from the show is very notable.
100%.
One of the best theme songs of all time.
100%.
There were two other TV shows at the time that were helicopter based that came out in the exact same year.
Something called Whirly Birds, right?
Yeah. We'll talk about that during the fun
way
facts.
Worse.
But those we don't really have any memory of. There was one called Riptide and one called something like that.
They're not very important.
But I think Airwolf really between the badass helicopter and the theme song
and
is
the badass name, quite frankly, Airwolf is
Airwolf,
a cool
name. That is a cool name. Yeah.
Yep.
And so I think it really succeeded and really got a place in pop culture history as a result, where those other two are just like, I've never heard of these.
No,
I mean, I knew about the Blue Thunder TV show.
Yeah. Which is not a bad name either.
That's no.
Whirly Birds
is
bad.
A plane, right?
Blue Thunder? No, it was a helicopter.
Oh, okay.
It was a Roy Scheider movie in 1983, in the summer of 83, and it was about an advanced helicopter, and it was a surveillance helicopter for the LAPD in a police state version, like a militaristic police state future. So the Blue Thunder TV show kind of continued that theme, I think.
But. Now, I have to say right off the bat, I see in your intro here, you say that this show ran 4 seasons, 80 episodes, 3 seasons on CBS, 1 USA.
Correct.
whoever mass-produced the Airwolf DVDs that I just bought yesterday list 79 episodes, so I got screwed out of one.
They're listing the first one as one.
Oh, is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And that first episode that we're talking about today was actually released as a feature-length film in some countries. I think the one I saw was Indonesia.
It was a made-for-TV movie here, I think.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Also released with the trailer in the beginning, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, they do that every episode, don't they? Were they
for
opening?
The whole episode?
I hate that. So that's one point I was going to make in this is I didn't realize that I think Battlestar is the first one that I ever saw. Doctor Who does that too. I hate that. Yeah. I don't know. I had no idea we were doing it in the 80s.
I'd forgotten they did that in Battlestar.
It's awful. Wow. They do it in Battlestar too. It's so awful. Like I don't. You don't have to sell me on the show I'm about to watch. I want to watch it and be surprised by what happens.
So you basically a movie trailer for the episode.
That's so dumb. I hate that crap. But yes, Airwolf, it doesn't do that in the pilot, obviously. But every episode of the set, I don't know if the rest of it is. Spoiler, I went and watched the rest of the first season because I was so enamored with the pilot.
That's not a spoiler for anybody. That's just a fun fact.
Okay, fun fact.
That is a fun fact. That's for the second half of the show.
I don't think anybody's tracking your life. I don't think they have a thomasdancinglife.blogspot.com.
What was he watching this week?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
I didn't know he'd watched Airwolf
fun
yet.
Fact. I'm going to get through all four seasons in the next couple weeks.
What was he watching instead of Punisher or Daredevil?
I know. I've seen all of Daredevil.
Are you going to go through Knight Rider next?
No, I don't care about that one. Some of it's nostalgia, too, because I didn't watch Knight Rider as a kid.
Yeah.
I watched Airwolf as a kid.
The Geeks Who Drink quiz that's about what did Thomas watch this last month is now ruined.
Oh my God.
Nobody can go there.
Dang it. This show was directed, created, and written by Donald Belisario, who actually was a writer for the original Battlestar Galactica. He also created Magnum P.I. He created Quantum Leap after Airwolf.
Yep.
He created JAG, and he created NCIS, which is still going today. I think he's in his 80s. And
there's only a billion
probably made some money off that one.
Oh, yeah. He's a rich son of a...
You know, he's going, the shittiest show I created missed on the most money for me.
Yep, that's CBS winning formula. The IMDb description for this is, this comes from Prismark 1030, and this was actually written in
April. Relation to you, right?
No, exactly. Okay. No relation. Prismark wrote in April 2018. This two-part episode sees a prototype helicopter being tested by Dr. Charles Moffett, who goes rogue and steals it. He shoots the assembled observers and takes the prototype to Libya.
One key point that was left out there is that he's actually the creator of the machine as well.
Right.
True. One man codenamed Archangel survives. He's the head of a shadowy covert organization, and he goes to see Hawk in his remote cabin and asks him to recover Airwolf. However, Hawk would only do it if the firm finds his brother, Sinjin, missing in Vietnam as a POW, or as a POW.
Note that they put an S in organization.
Yeah.
So how do they spell Sinjin there?
It's actually St. John is how
that's
it's
what I
spelled.
Thought, too. Why does he say Sinjin? Because that part I haven't
I looked that up,
yet.
And it's a common pronunciation for St. John is Sinjin.
Sinjin?
I think it's a Brit thing. It's a British pronunciation.
No part of what Stringfellow Hawk shows in this show, in the first
British.
Season at least, shows that he has any leanings towards British.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
Hawk is a loner, a bit of a loser in the lottery of life. Everyone close to him dies. In some way, he reminds me of General Maximus Decimus Meridius from the Oscar-winning Gladiator. Everyone close to him died as well. Maybe both characters should have been called Lucky. What?
Who the fuck is this?
With an exclamation point.
This guy's definitely related to Mark.
Sidekick Santini, played by Ernest Borgnine, is dressed like someone who would rather dance all night in an L.A. gay club.
That's not true. What is wrong with this guy?
He's dressed like an 80s grandpa.
He's a little sparkly in the pilot, but that's okay.
Yeah, but he's got high-waist pants.
Bit.
Just because he's got a sateen jacket.
Yeah. He's trying to promote his airline.
And it's kind of a satin hat, too.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love a sateen jacket? And love it?
Does anybody go to a strip club hoping to see Ernest Borgnine bare all? Because
I do.
That's a really weird situation.
Prismark, no relation, continues. David Hemmings, who incidentally did appear in Gladiator, has a fruity old time playing the villain, especially when he gets to torture exotic dancers suspected of being U.S. agents out in the Libyan desert.
That's true. It's
a
weird,
fruity old
it's
time.
True.
Who happened to be in Gladiator? I guess
he's creepy too. How about I help you interrogate them?
How
he's
much
so
would it be for
crazy.
This woman?
The guy that plays, what's his name again? What's his character name? The guy
Charles Moffett.
The guy that plays Charles Moffett. I knew when I watched it, I was like, I recognize that guy from something.
Yeah.
He's the. It's funny. Here's the second Gladiator reference to the show.
Should be the third, but
He's the announcer at the stadium, at the arena, for announcing the Gladiators and stuff.
Yep.
He has super massive eyebrows at that point too, but he doesn't have them in this in the Airwolf.
That's unfortunate. Yeah.
He's being fruity, so he keeps his eyebrows.
Sure, fruity.
He's got to be fruity for the LA gay clubs.
Oh, you're confusing him and Ernest, Ernest Borgnine.
Maybe
sir.
Him and Ernest go out to the gay club.
Wearing his full-on Darth Vader Arabic outfit.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Is that the end of it?
Or? That's the summary, yeah.
Okay, cool.
So the cast is... There's really only three main cast members throughout season one, and that is Jan Michael Vincent, who plays Stringfellow Hawk, the pilot of Airwolf. Ernest Borgnine, as we just mentioned, the sateen jacket, floppy hat-wearing, fruity gay club attending engineer of Airwolf. You might have known him from many things, like The Wild Bunch of McHale's Navy. And Alex Cord, who was in Police Story and Jake and the Fat Man, and he plays Archangel, a.k.a. Michael Coldsmith Briggs.
His assistant is also considered a main character. The one lady that's predominantly his assistant the whole first season, I don't know about moving on from there, but I can't remember her name. She's been in other things, too. But
well, she wasn't in the first episode, was she?
I'm pretty sure she... I don't know.
The only one who survived was Asian Lady in White.
Yes, and she wasn't. Yeah, she was. So after that, I guess they didn't pay enough money for Asian Lady in White. But yeah. After that, he has an assistant that's with him the rest of the first season. So.
Okay.
I was saying, basically, all the assistants were killed, right?
Yeah, I figured that was going to be the running theme or the joke throughout all of Airwolf season one was every woman that appears is just killed in every episode.
Well, most of them are in relation to Stringfellow Hawk. Well,
of course they are. They're true.
They all die anyway. It's like a Bond situation.
They're throwaway characters. All of them are throwaway characters.
Sure, sure. He spanks their bum.
Yeah. Throws them down on the bed and in his cabin.
Exactly.
Every single night. So the opening to this episode is pretty effective, aside from the fucking iguana.
Exactly. What? The iguana was really stupid.
Like it's like
Sons of Anarchy, you know, the crow at the beginning and the crow at the end.
Yeah. Except it's an iguana, like, sitting under a helicopter that they focus on for like 10 minutes conservatively. Like,
hanging onto the wheel minutes. And then falling off for no particular reason.
It's so weird.
I felt so... That iguana was probably killed. I felt so bad for that thing. Like, it's...
He'll be all right.
I'm guessing they didn't have a stunt iguana.
Yeah.
And it was just like extreme close-up of iguana over and over again.
And I wonder what happened. Did they like set the iguana up or did the iguana just happen to pop on there and they're like, this is a really cool
Let's
scene.
Let's focus on this.
Surely it was a stunt. It was like went through central casting.
They narrowed it down to that particular iguana. Yeah.
It's probably right by CAA.
Which one of you can cling the best?
But we started at the test site, right?
Yeah, the test site. I was just saying, the opening, I think, is iguana aside, stupid iguana aside.
Yeah.
I think it reminds me a lot of the opening of Top Gun, because it starts with aside from Kenny Loggins, we have the Airwolf theme song, and it's just like various shots of Airwolf and guys walking out of the desert as slowly as possible up to the helicopter.
Right. True.
I think it was a pretty effective opening, and it really gets you kind of jazzed for the show because you're instantly going to some sort of action.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think the only way you could have made that scene better was get rid of the damn iguana.
Right.
Maybe replace it with Kenny Loggins.
Or at least minimize the iguana.
Minimize it, yeah.
Or put Kenny Loggins hanging onto the bottom of Airwolf.
I don't think the iguana needed to be in every alternate shot. Like every cut to a different shot didn't need to be an up close of the iguana.
I agree. I think iguana could have been cut completely. It would have been fine.
Maybe just an opening shot of the iguana.
Say, hey, we're in the desert. His contract
that's true.
Maybe
that's true.
He had to be in every shot.
He had a minimum number of scenes he had to appear in.
Exactly. That's why he still gets checks to this day. His royalties.
His royalty check. He probably makes more money than Jan Michael Vincent at this
probably.
Point.
Indeed.
Yeah. And his leg probably hasn't been amputated like
that is
Jan
a good
Michael
point.
Vincent. Although they can probably regrow it, so it doesn't matter to him.
That is a good
he
point.
He can keep using intravenous drugs.
Go ahead and take this one.
That's a scoreboard.
I'll grow another one.
That's a scoreboard to Jan Michael.
He can just rip off his leg and give it to Jan Michael Vincent. His little iguana
just
leg.
Just hangs outside of Jan Michael's house in Mississippi, ripping his own leg off.
Handing him a new one every week.
Exactly.
Bitch, I made more money than you ever did on Airwolf.
Just give it the little iguana leg. Yeah. Put it on there with Elmer's glue.
That iguana's an asshole. He's a real asshole.
J&V just keeps injecting the leg, the little iguana leg with heroin. So yeah, the show starts out, and basically, as we mentioned in the summary, Charles Moffett is the current pilot and the creator of Airwolf, and they are testing this.
They're trying to convince the military to sell, to buy all of the time and money they've spent in the research.
Yeah.
I think, was it $1 billion that they asked the
Something
military
like that,
for?
Yeah.
I think so.
And they've been working on it since the Bay of Pigs.
Yes.
Which is, what, the early 60s when that happened under JFK's watch?
Took 20 years, man.
At least 20 years,
So what did they... Yeah, I mean...
It took 20 years to take an existing helicopter and stick guns on it.
Yeah. They had to develop the...
it's also impervious to bullets, so, I mean...
Yeah, they didn't have
bullets. Probably took some engineering
of
some sort.
Although they could have taken another 5 years and made the fuel intake bulletproof also.
That's true. Why couldn't they put a little cap over it with, like, a little robot? They can. Right. They have a hatch for the guns.
It's got to have a weakness.
Does it?
It doesn't have
it. It has to have a weakness.
Which, you know, to the end of it, you know... You know, cutting ahead to when Moffat dies at the end, when Stringfellow.
Don't do that yet.
No. I just want to speak to the fuel intake.
Oh,
when he pulls out his little revolver and he's going to shoot Airwolf, is he aiming for the fuel?
He must be.
Spoiler alert for anybody that hasn't seen this yet.
Oh, we'd spoil the whole thing.
I just wish because in the middle of the scene, when he's hanging out at the pool with
his
co-pilots and the random guy in the pool.
Yeah,
he's shooting the coins. I'm like, is this a setup later for the fuel tank thing?
They
never really pulls the trigger to try to shoot Airwolf's fuel tank.
Well,
right.
The theory is that he was going to.
I know
he was going to try, and then String blows him. You know,
up a couple of times. Yeah. So they're in Devil's Anvil, California, which actually is a real place. It's somewhere near the mountains of San Diego.
God, so weird. A TV show had a real place in it?
Well, it actually wasn't because it actually was filmed in Arizona.
Yeah.
But it is actually a real place. And, you know, this is the same location where they later hide Airwolf
right.
in that same desert. I had this in my mind this since I was a kid that they parked Airwolf in a dormant volcano for some reason, like on an island in
a
volcano, not in the middle of the desert. I didn't remember that at all.
I remember it was a desert.
I remember them
landing in a mountain.
Is it an actual desert? It's not a mountain. Well, they always talk about it being cold up there, so.
Yeah,
it's not in the middle of a desert.
Yeah,
it's
it is.
It's the coldest desert ever, then.
Remember, they fly into the giant rock thing, and they land Dom's helicopter.
They do, but they're talking about
helicopter.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, they talk about how cold it is up there. So.
Well, they do show snow in the when they first fly into that.
Yes.
In their future base. But,
yes.
Yeah, so Moffat, there's a senator there who apparently had worked with Moffat before in a previous project, sometime between the Bay of Pigs and Airwolf.
Yeah.
In that 20-year span or however long that was. And I guess Senator Bagel got it shut down at some point.
Right.
I
doesn't matter what his name is.
Is it?
Spared Senator Gay.
I don't have any insight into the military.
He doesn't live long.
Does the senator visiting military test sites to get funding, is that it seems like it's a TV and movie trope that there's always some politician, senator on hand to...
That always has to be wine
and
dine some
it's
way.
Not.
To be wine
because
and dine.
Senators are... They're always pushing the things that their state is going to sell.
Right.
So that...
Inside
their
politics,
state gets more
Thomas.
Money. I mean, just saying, that's not a trope. That's actually the way it goes.
So. Okay, so they actually do go to
100%.
All right, didn't know that.
I don't know that it's quite as frequent
as
we're
every...
led to believe for these things, and right. I don't know that they're on the front line getting demonstrations for shit. But they're definitely they're the ones selling it to Congress and to vote on bills that enable their state to be able to contribute to the military in whatever different way.
So. This guy, I'll just call him Senator Bagel because he's very demanding. He wants a bagel with cream cheese.
Sure.
Cream cheese, exactly.
Which, this is where we meet Archangel, a.k.a. Future Eye Patch, and we meet Lady in White 1 in this opening scene. So
Original assistant.
Yeah, they work for the firm, which is apparently an even more secret division of the CIA.
Yes.
But all of their projects are known to the entire government. Even though they're supposed to be a super top secret agency,
the super top.
They're secret, but they're not secret
because
they have a senator that's going to sell it to the rest of Congress. But it's a secret thing inside of the CIA.
Because he also says, once you approve this, we want the first five Airwolves for the firm.
Right,
and then later they land and they take over the carrier Enterprise later. So everybody knows about the existence of this supposedly top secret agency.
Right,
but at any rate, they always wear white. The people in the firm wear white. So this is where we get Lady in White 1, who's his first assistant.
That's how you know they're with the firm. They wear white.
Yeah. And Archangel, this is pre-eye patch Archangel. So they're at this test site with the senator trying to show off Airwolf. Moffat goes rogue, destroys the command center, shoots out Archangel's eye, destroys Lady in White 1.
Kills everybody else.
Yeah. Kills everybody else.
But Archangel only loses an eye.
Exactly. Right. No scarring either.
No
just
scarring.
Loses the eye.
And I guess, I don't think he had the cane at that point, so he gets a cane also.
Yeah. Oh, maybe he messed up his leg.
Maybe got a limp,
Yeah. And
he got a slight limp and lost an eye.
Kills the senator because the senator apparently had pulled funding for one of Moffat's previous projects. The question I have was, this whole setup...
I mean, I'm pretty sure maybe that was part of it, but I'm pretty sure it was just because he wanted to keep Airwolf.
Well, he mentioned Project Proteus. And remember me from Project Proteus? And I got... Maybe they didn't say outright that they pulled the funding or something like that, but I got the intention that he was getting his revenge on Senator Bagel.
Well, then he says... And how proud of everybody is that I've changed. I haven't changed. I think he was the bad guy in the Project Proteus.
Okay.
And they convinced him to be good in order to help develop this weapon. And then he's telling them, that's what I got out of it.
That, okay. Well, remember, maybe you're right.
You think I've changed. I haven't. Yeah. Die, everybody.
I mean, this show has layer upon layer upon layer.
Oh, yeah, man.
The show is so complex.
It's hard to drill down through all that.
It was really 1984's version of Lost. So right. Many things.
God, thank God it wasn't Lost.
So many twists and turns.
So I couldn't understand if, like, the senator showing up to the bunker was motivation for him going rogue, or it just happened to be a coincidence that was that senator that showed up, or it was all just a... I don't know.
Or why? You mean like why he took that particular time to do it?
Yeah, destroy the command center.
The senator seemed to be to invoke something in him. I mean, he was making a big statement, like a big anti-U.S. statement or whatever, by going to Libya and helping Gaddafi anyway. After that point,
true. So sure.
I'm sure killing a senator was a bonus for him.
I'm guessing it was. He already had the deal set up with Livia,
yeah,
Livia Soprano, to steal Airwolf and killing a senator, and was just a bonus on top of that. But, so he destroys the bunker, gives Archangel an eye patch, kills Lady in White 1, and...
I don't know that Moffat gave Archangel an eye patch, but...
Here's your little eye patch! And, that's pretty much the opening scene.
That would have been a weird stop down. Land real quick so I can give this guy an eye patch.
He must wear this from now on. I'm going off to be fruity in Libya. So, cut to 3 months later.
Yeah. We'll let Fruity Ernest Borden and I take over my position later.
God. Later, we can be fruity together. Fruity enemies. 3 months later, we cut to a helicopter barreling onto some property in the middle of a lake, a cabin out in the middle of the woods.
Sure.
And this is where Stringfellow Hawk lives. And Stringfellow Hawk apparently is a former pilot of Airwolf. And this is one thing...
test phase.
Yeah, but this is the one thing they never bothered to explain, like, why... Basically, Hawk would have had some connection to Moffat, some sort of antagonistic relationship prior to that. Because if Moffat had not been the original pilot and Hawk was, and they would have had some relationship.
Maybe. And Moffat was the creator, right?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Hawk would have known each other somehow.
Why do we need to know that?
But they bothered to weave in all these other details about the stupid art collection.
Maybe Moffat took off to some Libya country for a little while to help them with another weapon of some sort, and they brought in Hawk to try
to... I guess it's possible. But
why do we need to know?
Because they bothered to do
it. It would have been better, actually.
Because they took 5 minutes to weave in an iguana, and Stringfellow Hawk making...
You're so stuck on that iguana.
...audio love to a stupid eagle.
Yeah.
They couldn't have, like,
there's
thrown
nothing wrong with
line.
A little bit of audio love with an eagle. What's wrong with that?
Except for it happens... For like 10-minute scenes, literally four times in the episode.
You're making shit
I am
up.
Not making
it's not
it up.
10-minute scenes.
No, it's terrible.
I'll bet you $100,000 is not.
They're
not
at least
10 minutes
around 3
worth.
Minutes.
Oh, it feels like 10 minutes each time. Each scene, put it that way.
Weird how you qualified it when money was on the line.
All right, here's a little bit of the cello making love to the eagle. And that goes on for 10 minutes.
It doesn't go on for 10 minutes. How long is that clip?
That is only 22 seconds long, but it's because I cut out the other 3.5 minutes.
Whatever.
And that happens for 40 minutes of the first episode.
No.
Just
that's
him.
Not right.
Just him ear fucking an
eagle. Basically, there's two halves to the pilot. One half is him playing the cello.
The one thing they could have done a little bit more is, I don't know, had him fake actually playing a little better because it goes on over and over
again.
It
was pretty bad.
It really
was. Really, I'm talking about through the first season. Like, you're not even pretending like you're.
Oh, he does.
He'll move the finger every once in a while, but I mean, not to the notes or anything.
Oh, so there's more cello playing.
Oh, there's tons. Oh, yeah. There's almost probably at least a cello appearance every episode.
Oh my God!
And they could have had a few more shots of an eagle flying.
Yeah,
use the same one like 10 times. Yes. Like each minute of the 10 minutes of playing.
There's not 10 minutes of playing.
Why are you so defensive of this cello?
So, you guys are making it sound terrible.
Because it is terrible.
It's not
Thomas.
Terrible.
Thomas
terrible.
Loves the cello playing.
It's not
okay?
Even
one time is fine. But 4 times in one episode? Yeah. Are you kidding me?
I don't think that's accurate.
No, that is accurate. I counted it again this morning.
Okay.
4 times.
That is a lot.
That is a lot of eagle fucking.
I bet it's not 10 minutes total in that 4 times.
I bet it's
maybe twice in a 2 hour if you got to put one in every hour, but that's plenty.
That not 40 minutes out of a 2 hour pilot.
Right.
It's not 40 minutes. You're
Thomas,
making bullshit
Thomas,
up.
I need you to go rewatch the pilot and log every minute. Put up every minute on Thomas's eagle cello fucking.
Okay. I'm not starting that website, but
Well, then slash bangingindiandancing.com.
Fuck off.
Then add it to thomasisdancing.com or whatever.
Exactly.
I don't have a website for that. I just do it every time I ring somebody's door. What the hell?
So, yeah. So the opening, the next opening scene is where we meet Hawk. He's playing the cello for this eagle because for reasons.
Whatever, yeah.
On his dock.
He says he's trying to get the eagle to trust him.
Does the eagle ever trust him through the first season? Does it ever land on him or something?
Not yet.
Oh, well, that's...
It doesn't save him
from... He's really playing the
long
game.
You never heard of continuing storyline themes? Come on. We'll maybe by the end of season four.
Yeah, well, three.
He saves Airwolf from the red Airwolf.
Maybe
later.
He's in the last episode of season four.
That's the conclusion is the eagle finally
lands. And the eagle finally lands.
on his coma body.
Yeah. What the hell's wrong with you guys? It was 1987. He wasn't coma.
It was 84.
I'm talking about the last season.
He was in a coma in 87.
No, he wasn't.
88. Yeah, he was. In the very first episode of season four, he goes into a coma and Sinjin takes over as the new pilot. Dick Van Dyke's
what I'm
kid.
Saying. Maybe he comes back from the coma at the end of 1987.
Doesn't.
I don't know. You don't know either.
I did too. I looked it up on Wikipedia.
Okay, fine. Whatever.
He never comes out of it?
No, he never comes out of it. You never find out the fate of Stringfellow Hawk. I'm assuming he...
That's life imitates art.
I'm assuming...
God!
I'm just going to assume the eagle...
fucking dickhead.
The eagle came to the hospital, picked him up, and carried him away.
So Sinjin takes over in season four?
Dick Van Dyke's kid. Played by Dick Van Dyke's...
Weird.
Barry Van Dyke.
That's weird. Okay. Anyway.
Definitely the least famous of the Van Dyke family.
I would say so.
So the Eyepatch and Lady in White 2 come in. Apparently the only way you can get to this cabin is by helicopter, by the way.
Yeah.
There are no roads in or out. It just sits on a lake. And they come barely in on a helicopter.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a helicopter there.
I know, no, he has to just stay there all the
time. No, because Ernest Borgnine always comes and brings his groceries.
And picks him up.
Yeah, right, yeah. That's I forgot true. About that. He brought him like 5 boxes of stuff.
And it was like 5 boxes of beef, even though he's a pescatarian.
That's a good point. He's like, I got burgers and steak.
And hot dogs and pork chops. And he's like, me and the dog usually the ones that end up eating. And like, I mean, I guess that's true because all Hawk has to do is go out there and catch a pretty trout.
Yeah, a beautiful trout.
True. Beautiful trout
be murdered.
True. Too pretty to be killed.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we need to break all that stuff down.
There's so many layers. This is what I don't understand. So the show is so full of Reagan-era machismo. Their women are just basically faceless. Swappable characters, because when Lady in White 2 comes in, I legitimately had to rewind it and say, is this Lady in White 1 or is this a new Lady in White? They look almost exactly
the same.
It
was the same one for a while. Not.
I did too. Yes, they do. They are so interchangeable. They have the same body type. They have the same face. They come from the same family tree.
Blame the firm. You don't... I don't know that. Just making shit.
I looked it up on thefirm.com. It was the same Lady in White.
The secret agency that has a public website.
Exactly.
Because they probably would.
Yeah, I literally could not tell. So I had to rewind it and say, I think these are different women, but I still wasn't sure even after I rewound it.
Right.
But I think they were different ladies. Because Stringfellow then asked, where's Mirella? And Eyepatch says, oh, she's on vacation. And I think that was a reference to Lady in White 1, and she was really dead.
Right.
And he didn't want to upset Stringfellow because apparently he's the unluckiest SOB that's ever lived.
Yes.
Yeah. His girlfriend was killed in a car accident.
Anybody that knows him, everyone's dead.
Yeah. His parents drowned in the lake, which he was probably living on.
Probably.
He's living in that. Their dead bodies are probably at the bottom of that, and the eagle probably ate them. And
that's why he wants them to come back to him, so it's a piece of his family.
See? It all circles around.
He just digs them up at little bits of the trout stomach every time.
God!
Daddy! And Sinjin St. John went MIA in Vietnam, and nobody's seen him since.
He's presumed dead.
Presumed dead.
Most everybody but him.
I guess it's only Ernest Borgnine's masturbating that kept him alive, being around Stringfellow.
It's true. The only reason he didn't commit suicide. And they have so many layers to Stringfellow Hog. It's so weird because he's this uber machismo character, indicative of kind of Reaganism of the time. But then they try to make he's a pescatarian. He's an art collector. He drinks fancy schmancy wine.
He's a man of many layers.
He's a Renaissance man.
Yeah,
apparently
man.
An expert at everything.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And they, in this art collection they keep referring to, they never bother to explain. He's like, oh, my grandfather collected from my grandma.
They explain it as time goes by.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
Did he like secret it out during World War II?
Somebody comes there. Well, no, but they slowly over time. It's like, oh, I just saw that at the what's that France popular.
The Louvre?
Yeah, that one. I just saw that at the Louvre, and he's like, no, you saw a copy.
Oh, yeah, well, he says that in the episode, but he says later that his grandfather collected, because he has mush mouth, But he never explained how did his grandfather get an original Van Gogh, and why is there a copy in the France Popular Museum?
I don't know.
That's a good point.
I don't know.
The France Popular Museum.
Couldn't they bother to explain that it was like he got it all during World War II and stole it from Hitler or something like
that? That's a good point. Yeah,
something like that.
I think that gets. Why do you want everything to be explained?
Because
to you, the
pilot? They spent 45 minutes ear fucking an eagle.
They could have skipped nothing to do with the art.
They could have skipped the cello scene. Had right. Lady in White 2 talk to LA Club Board 9 and say, "What's up with all this artwork?" And he could have been like, "Well, his father snuck it in over here."
Yeah, as he's pulling out a bundle after bundle of meat.
Exactly. Here's a burger.
I just don't understand. He's like this backwoods, you know, guy who doesn't wear underwear, sweaty all the time, catches trout by hand.
He's like the brawny man.
He is. He's
but brawny, a pescatarian.
But a little bit, you know, yeah. He's got a sensitive side, too.
Exactly.
He likes
What's
wine.
Wrong with that?
It's a strange confluence of character traits. I don't know. It's very, very strange. And it's also because the women, like I said, they're just kind of throwaway characters in every moment of the show.
We're talking about the pilot.
Exactly. I'm glad you understand the premise for the show.
You can't say that all women are throwaway characters.
Well,
there
for
were
this
only
one episode.
So many in that episode.
Five women die in the show, and they're all ladies in white.
They're not ladies in white.
Yes, they are.
The two strippers are not in white at all.
Yes,
when
they are.
Die.
There's
no,
only one stripper, and she was a two.
The first one gets dead.
Right.
That's why String's new girlfriend goes to take her place from the
right.
same agency.
There's two strippers.
So there's two.
Right.
Both of them were not wearing white.
Not at the time they died, but they were ladies in white who worked for the firm.
They're not called ladies.
Their official position was lady in white.
Shit up.
Did she get dead at the France Popular place?
Burn in hell. Fucking asshole.
Oh, all right. Well, anyways, this is where we find out that Hawk was a former pilot for Airwolf, and Archangel wants him to go steal back because even though they have access to every military resource under the planet because everybody knows they exist, they need this one guy
because
he's the only guy that can pilot
before.
Airwolf.
Yeah.
Right.
Because no other helicopter pilot could figure it out. As we find out later when, you know, L.A. Borgnine is in the back, he's like, "I don't know how any of this works. Oh, I flipped it on. All right."
Like, that is
he
true.
Can do that. Can that they get another true. Pilot?
You would think so. Or bother to send in any sort of, you know, like Delta Squad in with him to invade a Libyan palace. It's just Hawk in his camo
coming,
in his no underwear.
It had to be a totally small, discreet group.
Yeah. It's real discreet when it's Borgnine in high-waisted pants and a floppy satin hat.
He looks like he's supposed to be at an L.A. strip club, you know?
In Libya, yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't bring the iguana in.
Just ripping off his legs and chucking him at it.
What the fuck?
And I was shocked. I will say, I was very shocked in this episode. Like, the lack of action for an action-based show in 2 hours, there was so much
it's
non-action.
It's a lot of build-up,
oh, yeah.
For sure.
A lot of build-up.
Well, and I'll say, after watching the first season, that's the one thing that the show struggles the most from is... It's literally maybe a shot of them flying the helicopter at the beginning, talking to each other, and then a lot of build up, and then the theme music kicks on like 5 minutes from the end of the episode as Airwolf springs into action.
Yeah.
Like, can we maybe divert from the copy paste a little bit every once in a while?
Maybe a little more action throughout the episode.
Yes, it does happen occasionally, but I mean, it's a little the same freaking thing every time.
Yeah.
That's very 80s, though.
Sure. I mean, this was pre-TiVo, so, you know, people had to be able to come into a show. It's like modern-day CBS.
You know.
Yeah.
People want that where you can just come in and out of TV.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to be able to pick it up and not have to understand any backstory or character development. Because
that is a good point. Because
they do start doing that at some point. Like, the second or third one, they do a really corny one. And then the... fourth episode to the end of the first season, they start doing it's almost like a briefing,
right?
Like, your objective is to get these guys. Airwolf is flown by so and so. It's just like a really quick synopsis of what's happened so far, essentially.
Okay.
But
do they have like overarching like arcs for the year?
No.
Okay, I did not figure so.
Other than the eagle, the eagle mystery.
Is there a cliffhanger at the end of season one, or is it just...
No, that
just
was the other thing I didn't like about... I was like, maybe there's going to be something to tie, but no, there wasn't. Maybe they'll do that at some point, but they don't even do that episode to episode. There's not even like two-part episodes or anything like that.
This was the only one.
That's weird.
Yeah, well, and they aired all together, so it really wasn't. While it is one, it's not one type thing,
right.
So...
Yeah, I would have thought that we'd at least like have flashbacks to finding his brother or something at some point. Later.
Yeah, there are some things at some point in the first season already. There has been stuff like that, flashbacks, and yeah. There's some of that stuff. It's not, it's no Green Arrow, but I mean, it's,
yeah, okay, well,
there is some of that kind of stuff related.
Does he also end up on Lian Yu?
Yeah, exactly.
yet to know that full story yet, but not in season.
Maybe
one.
Maybe by season three.
Go back to the story. Fruity Moffat goes to Libya and meets up with Gaddafi Jr. And basically, they, rather than hiding Airwolf, they just park it in the middle of the courtyard of, at the summer palace of Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm. Where, you know, any satellite technology, even in 1984, could probably see it.
Exactly.
Less about, well, they know where it is. That's not, it wasn't hidden. They know exactly where to go find him. It's all about being able to go in there and go get it.
I guess that's true.
And
why don't you just destroy it, though?
Yeah, just send a nuclear missile.
They don't. The assumption here is that they can't rebuild it without having the original, because the person that built it is also now turned on them.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, on top of that, they mentioned they had a remote detonation capability, but Moffat disabled it.
Yeah.
So they couldn't do that.
There you go.
And they don't want to launch any missiles at the Summer Palace of Libya.
Starts World War III.
It'll start World War III with Russia.
Yeah.
So they can't do that. And so Eyepatch wants Hawk to do it because, again, he's the Airwolf pilot, and he offers him $1 million to do it. He says he only wants information about St. John St. John, the information that only the firm has and will give to him. So as a result, not St. John St. John, Eyepatch comes in and steals all of Hawk's artwork from the France Populaire place.
Yeah.
And
technically,
to get him,
he doesn't. The firm does.
Well, the firm
he says
does.
He tries to tell the firm not that that was a bad move. But
yeah.
And they, to motivate him to do it, they take his grandpa's artwork. And why does he talk like the guy from Silence of the Lambs?
Sometimes he's got a little stroke face, man. Give him a break.
Puts lotion in the basket.
Buffalo Bill Hawk, there he is.
Oh, weird. Oh, weird.
Buffalo Bill Hawk.
Should have been his other brother.
Yeah, exactly.
She agreed for a person. And then the other, pre-stealing artwork, the other carrot that Eyepatch dangles in front of Hawk is Lady in White, too. And she basically, you know, she's DTF because she comes through the cabin, even though it's a one-room cabin.
Yeah.
And Eyepatch is sleeping down below. She's strolling in the colon cabin, fully nude, with just an open weave blanket on. And she,
how do we know she's nude? Because you didn't see any. I mean,
we know she's nude.
See anything on the?
You know she's
ABC
nude.
TV or whatever the heck it was.
It was CBS. But later she wakes up on the couch after not boning Hawk, and she wakes up and she's like having to pull up her open weave while Eyepatch is in there making eggs.
Yeah,
and you can tell because it keeps slipping down, you know, from her breasts. So she was nude. She was strolling through the cabin nude.
She was definitely DTF.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she walked up to see the artwork pre-stolen from the France Populaire place.
It's easier to see before it was stolen.
True. this is where we get the wonderful. Well, not the wonderful moment of hashtag Me Too in this episode, and the pure.
Buffalo Hawk aggression there.
Buffalo Hawk aggression, so let's play that.
I'm sorry, I guess it's none of my business.
You didn't want to talk about her?
Yes, I did. Don't.
This is what you came here for.
No.
Archangel's worried I won't take the assignment. You're here to sweeten the deal.
You're wrong.
Well, you were a liar. Didn't come here to talk about art.
Yes, I did. Maybe not totally. I didn't come here for Archangel.
Liar's a liar. A whore's a whore.
Damn you.
A liar. A liar. A liar. A whore. Whore.
So great.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that scene was literally, I don't know, like, at least a minute and a half.
Yeah.
And JMV is such a smell the fart actor. There was so many just a
well, nice talk like that.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
And I had to like cut out all the extended pauses between dialogue. Like,
I mean, it's saying like, I don't know, sinus congestion problems or whatever.
Maybe.
Chief Wiggum. It was insane. It was
that
like
scene's pretty rough.
It was like a
sure.
minute of breathing between each line that I had to cut out. It was almost as bad as
trying to see the physical interaction happening there.
That's true. The heavy breathing and his pointed chin and the shadows. And we didn't mention he like throws her down on the bed and gets on top of her.
Yeah,
like, this is what you want.
He does.
She's like, don't.
Do not put your penis in me.
I didn't just come here for that.
The whole dialogue is pretty amazing.
I am not here for your penis.
Speak in whispers.
Damn you. Oh, mix me.
What?
Exactly.
What me?
Mix me.
Oh my God.
Moving on from that, so this is when they, so then they cut to, we see that, we find out that the way Hawk makes his real money is working for Dominic. They are stunt pilots, they own helicopters, and they work for movie studios, and he has to cater to some actor, some generic John from Chips type on
yeah.
The, it was a confusing set of like a Western town, but they were flying
helicopters.
It's very confusing.
Wasn't really sure, yeah.
And we find out that this is how they make their money, fine, whatever. It's a scene that goes on way too long. And again, there's so much setup in this episode that very little payoff. And then that's when we cut back to Libya and we find out this is where Moffat is now dressed like Darth Vader.
Well, I also just enjoy that scene that Hawk seems like he's okay with just dying by letting guy like not fly a helicopter properly. And
yeah,
you know, it's like the most insane helicopter flight ever through the random Western town. And I don't know. I'm surprised the thing didn't go down at all.
You mean like in real life?
Well, like no, but I'm saying somebody? Like if that had really happened, you know, I think somebody would have been dead. There would have been a little bit of liability of just letting the guy.
Well, that's probably. The one who doesn't know how to fly.
Probably.
They make him out to be like a Tom Cruise type.
Yeah.
So Tom Cruise is famous for doing all of his own stunts.
Yeah.
And they make this guy out to be this guy who, he's an actor who wants to fly this helicopter himself.
He's like, don't touch the controls, man. Yeah. I got it.
Or else.
Yeah.
In theory, he's going to fly this. So Hawk says, I won't touch the controls. Oh, the guy has
I won't touch the controls.
And so the whole scene goes awry and he almost gets everybody killed and Hawk has to take over.
Yeah.
Whatever. So very much a throwaway scene.
Yes.
And back in Libya, Moffat is, like I said, is dressed like Darth Vader now. He's wearing head to toe black, stereotypical Arab.
He's got no mask on him whatsoever.
No mask.
Stereotypical Arab garb is what I would say.
But he's dressed in head to toe black, but it's very reminiscent of Darth Vader.
Kind of, maybe, I guess.
Well, you know, everything in the 80s was pretty much some crazy foreign power in the desert was doing something crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Libya was a big enemy of the time, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
This is where we find out they landed Airwolf in the middle of a courtyard, you know, not keeping it from any prying eyes. right next to the Mercedes, the extensive Mercedes collection, which I do wonder, where was that quote-unquote summer palace actually at?
Yeah. It looked like it was like in the middle of town somewhere.
Yeah.
Based on later on when Stringfellow and L.A. Borgnine show up.
I wonder if it was actually somebody's house or somebody.
Yeah.
Something, some producer's house. And this is where Gaddafi Jr. shows up. I guess he's the head of the palace, and he essentially wants Moffat and the other Airwolf spares to go take out some French jets. So we get a scene of Airwolf taking out a couple of French jets.
Yep.
And
spare number two guy.
Yeah. Well, spare two
and
three.
Well, there's two and three. There's three of them.
Oh, yeah. I guess there are three of them.
Because one of them's cool with doing whatever the fuck, and one of them's really battling.
Yeah.
Is this right? Should we be doing this? Blah, blah, blah.
But doesn't really ever seem to come to fruition that storyline either.
Really.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And this, you know, at the same time, Hawk has to recruit. For some reason, he doesn't want them to know that Borgnine is helping him get Airwolf back. I didn't understand that plot. Why wouldn't they be okay with that? I mean, it's some spare in a satin jacket. Why would they care if he gets killed?
You've got me fucked up now. What's Eye Patch's real name?
Alex
Archangel.
Ford. Archangel?
Yeah.
So he had to sneak in there because he wouldn't officially... He said something about it, some throwaway bullshit about Ernest Borgnine couldn't make it through military checks or whatever to be a pilot or anything like that, so they had to bring him in as a fucking janitor.
So
because
that they bothered to give a throwaway line for.
Yeah, exactly.
They couldn't tell us how they got the art.
Oh, my God.
Couldn't tell us Hawk's real connection to Moffat.
Right.
You're putting way too much... There's not enough at stake with the fucking art to really give that tissue shits about it.
But they could have 12 scenes with an eagle and a cello.
Yeah.
There were not 12 fucking scenes. You both are insane. anyway.
And this is where... And then we cut back to after the French jets are destroyed and he recruits Dom. Then we get Lady in White 3, who is posing as a dancer at the Red Castle Club.
This is the same, too.
And no, it's not. This is Lady in White 3. Lady in White 1.
The girls that go into the field aren't really Lady in Whites.
They are ladies in white.
Okay, so Lady
in
White 1.
Anybody that works for the firm, Mark, is called Lady in White.
Oh, my God.
Lady in White 1 was destroyed in the bunker. Okay. Lady in White 2 is the one that gets killed in the desert.
It's Me Too.
No, technically, she's the main. You never meet her. The second Lady in White is the gal that ends up going to replace the gal
right.
in the desert.
She is Lady in White 2. Lady in White 3 is Angela, who's the dancer at the Red Castle. We know she's a Lady in White because they say she's a secret agent for
yes,
the government.
Yes, correct.
And Archangel refers to her as Angela, so she
but
is a Lady in White.
She never was actually in America.
No, she was not in White
in
when
white.
We saw her, but okay. we know
she
she's
just
a
works
lady
for
white.
The firm.
Right.
Because all dancers at that club work for the firm.
Exactly.
As we find out later.
And everybody company. Who works for the firm wears white.
Yeah.
That is clear.
Oh my God.
So
and every dancer gets tortured and killed.
Right. Tortured,
so
raped, and
the firm,
killed.
Instead of saying, maybe we should try a different entry point, just
say, try it again.
Just keep throwing ladies in white out
that's
here
right.
as dancers.
That's
so they
right.
can
didn't say it was the smartest secret, not secret CIA branch.
Yes. So Angela's
the same people that are in control of hiding their identity
yes.
had that plan.
Exactly. So Lady in White 3, Angela is tortured, raped, and killed by Moffat. In recompense, Gaddafi Jr. demands that he destroy, that Moffat destroy, use Airwolf to destroy and take out an American destroyer.
Yep.
And this is where we get some of our lovely stock footage
yes.
that
sure.
Airwolf
sure,
loves.
Sure.
They basically have very clear action scenes, and then it cuts to extremely grainy, burning up film from like military propaganda
yeah,
films
from like 1962 sure. or something.
It's so weird because the shot
it's
inside,
probably not that old, but yes.
Well, the shots inside the battleship, the guys are wearing horn rimmed glasses. It's
yeah.
clearly taken from like the guys are running down the stairs, the sailors in the battleship,
yeah.
sure,
and they're wearing like it's full on 1960s.
Yeah, I know.
Propaganda film
yeah.
rips. Like they couldn't stage anything.
They don't continue doing that. They don't continue showing you the perspective of the person being bombed.
Well, that's good.
That's probably a good idea.
But what about when yeah. when Airwolf was fighting other aircraft? Do they continue to use fake explosions from propaganda films?
Oh yeah. I mean it's not. I mean they didn't actually blow up real planes. I mean was all. They, also the missiles are this unbelievable starburst color that
yeah.
don't look like actual missiles do.
I do yeah. love the perspective of the missile that we kept getting as it's rushing by the landscape. It's
yes.
just the tip of the missile is flying by.
Yeah.
It's all bright orange,
yeah.
yellow, whatever.
Well, I know, I realize it's super cheesy now, but I remember the time thinking it was awesome.
Oh, yeah. At the time, they put a fuck ton of money in that
yeah.
stuff.
But now it's looking back, it's like...
Well, yeah, it looks awful now.
Yeah, it looks awful,
oh, of course. Yeah.
You don't watch a movie, a show like
oh,
Airwolf... For the stunts.
35 years
fucking,
later.
Yes, I know. Be like, man, this was really ahead of its time.
Yeah.
That's very true. So,
although the shots of the actual helicopter flying still aren't bad.
No,
they're not bad at all.
Because they were, I still love Airwolf. It's still a badass looking helicopter.
Yeah.
And the stuntwork is very cool,
yeah.
especially for the time. I mean, you can see the $1.2 million they put in every episode, you can see that on the screen, aside from the rips of the propaganda films.
Right, exactly, yeah.
You can also tell, the problem is, whenever they have anything in the shot, you can tell now, where I couldn't tell as a kid, when they hit the jets.
Oh,
first
yeah.
of all, they talk about when the jets hit, the rotors disengage.
Yes, and they
and
never disengage.
The rotors are always going.
They're always
right.
engaged.
But the other thing is, you can tell a lot of times when the camera is being sped up to make it look like it's flying faster than it
sure.
is.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, plus they reuse that same turbo shot a few times in the pilot.
Oh, all the fucking... They use that all the effing time.
Okay.
It's the same shot of the little fire coming out of that thing.
Yeah.
So, and this is part of the thing, is like, after they blow up the battleship, they spend, like, again, the lack of action in the show is you think there would be an urgency to the show after the battleship is destroyed.
Yeah.
But this is where we...
There was
no real urgency.
You see the military command, they're like, if they don't get it by, you know, X, Y, we're going in there after
right.
them.
But I'm saying on the part...
battleship
I'm saying on the part of Hawk and Borgnine and Eyepatch.
Well, they're incommunicado in Libya. What do you want them to do?
Well, no, but they know that the destroyer has been destroyed.
You want them to get on the phone and talk
Why
to
not?
Them about it? They're undercover in Libya.
Well, apparently, Eyepatch has a secret phone to the firm anyways in Stringfellow's cabin because he says I'm going to be on the blue line
okay.
all day.
Is Stringfellow's cabin in enemy territory at this point?
That's an excellent question. We don't know.
No! That's what I'm saying.
We don't know where that is, actually.
We don't know where that is.
It's not in Libya, though, is the point.
It's when it's within helicopter ride from a desert.
Yeah,
they
there
do
you go.
They
That's
go to
true.
Airwolf.
That's true.
From there.
So finally, we get some action to move it towards the area, the vicinity of Libya.
Yeah.
And Stringfellow goes to Turkey, and Borgnine is somehow going to make his own way to Libya. and somehow you just miraculously—I know they have another throwaway line to why Borgnine shows up a week early because because the battleship been destroyed. They move up the timetable a week, and they send Lady in White 2 to take the place of Lady in White 3.
Yes,
and
that's part of the. Well, I guess that happens before because Well, shoot, that's one of the things they leverage String to go in. Like, she's already in there. You better go.
Right.
I guess she learned the dance moves from Lady in White 3.
Right, exactly. She had a video.
And some intense Dance Revolution training real quick, and then sent her over there.
In 1984.
She was at thomasdancing.com.
Right.
Before .coms were even available.
Okay, it was on the DARPAnet. You had thomasdancing.darpa.
It was just little digital blocks moving around, but she got the idea. Yeah.
It's amazing.
But she learned her dance moves. Yeah. Sweet, sweet dance moves. Maybe that's part of the Lady in White training, is they have to...
They have to know how to dance?
They have to do the DARPA Dance Revolution.
Well, since all the ladies in white eventually have to go undercover in that same exact spot as dancers...
It's part of their training, yeah. They all have to do a turn as a stripper.
It's a pretty important piece of their training.
That's how they pass their finding the Lady in White test is...
Exactly.
Lady in White test...
Can you go undercover and be a stripper?
You're donned in white.
Congratulations.
Can you be a non-stripping stripper?
Oh, my God.
Which is another TV trope I love of the 80s is when they go to quote-unquote strip clubs, nobody ever takes off any shred of clothing.
They're just dancers. They're just dancers.
Yeah, because everybody knows we all go to dance clubs, not to see them take off the clothes.
Just to dance. Let's see those dancing skills.
That's right. I want to see those sweet, sweet moves. How accomplished are you at your pliés and whatnot?
Exactly.
Wow.
Can you do the running man and the mashed potato?
Yeah.
Can you do the hammer dance?
They do the drowning one where they put the hand on the nose.
Uh-oh.
Again, another part of the Lady White test.
In 1984.
Whoever can do the hammer dance the best gets to pass their final test at the Red Castle.
Shake their parachute pants the best. They go in next.
Exactly. So they send String to Turkey, and he arrives in a camo wife beater and camo pants.
Yeah.
And this is where we meet Lady in White 4, Asian Lady in White.
All right.
It would be
part two.
You know, it's a really good thing that they got L.A. Borgnine in there, too, whichever means necessary, because he's the only one that can speak a foreign language. It's very crucial to this whole thing. So
String cannot, of course.
Yeah, he can't speak anything, apparently.
Yeah, he knows nothing.
He can barely speak English. So.
That's true. All he can do is mix people.
Yeah, exactly.
God. So he gets to Turkey and then eventually gets to Libya, and somehow L.A. Borgnine is there. I know there's a throwaway line. I don't remember what it is.
He's a janitor.
But somehow he knows to show up a week early, and I can't remember why that was exactly.
No.
But anyways, he's dressed up like a general or something.
Yeah.
He graduated janitor school a week early.
Hitched up those pants and went.
Yep.
And this is when they invade Gaddafi Jr.'s palace.
Yeah.
And the only person who has a gun is Hawk. Right. He has a tiny little Uzi, and all L.A. Borgnine has is his little floppy satin hat.
Right.
And again, they couldn't have bothered to send Chuck Norris and you know, the Delta Squad in with them at all.
Somebody.
Why didn't they go in the cover of night?
That's a good point, too.
They just kind of, I don't know. Plus,
they just kind of walk around like fairly normal, and they're like, oh, there it is in the courtyard.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sitting in the courtyard. They just hop over a little retaining wall.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how tough of a mission was this?
It's like. And they just
send any spares in there.
They just stroll into the palace. They take out the rest of the Airwolf crew.
Yeah,
and then they stroll out in the Airwolf suits, which of course fit them perfectly.
Oh yeah,
and with the helmets on, and Moffat in his Darth Vader outfit spots them and demands that. Or was it Moffat or was it Gaddafi Jr.?
Not Moffat.
Moffat was out torturing Lady in White 2. Right?
That's right. He had taken Lady in White 2 out to the desert to rape, torture, and kill her.
Yeah,
and that's right. Gaddafi Jr. spots him, demands
and interrogator.
Right. And allegedly interrogate.
He's talking, trying to get answers out of her while he's like, he's actually, what do you mean allegedly? Allegedly rape. We didn't see any of the rape happen.
That's a good point.
They talk about how perverse Moffat is. As long as you don't get hurt, it doesn't matter.
I'm just saying, we see him ask her questions. We don't see the rape.
His questions are mostly, why is there an iguana in the show? And why is Stringfellow ear fucking an eagle?
Oh, my God.
But Gaddafi Jr. Is suspicious.
Why are there four eagle scenes in this pilot?
Gaddafi
just
Jr.
give me water.
But suspicious.
Why?
Somehow Borgnine has already gotten into the engineer's cabin of Airwolf and is trying to turn things on. Meanwhile, Hawk is left to deal with Gaddafi Jr. and the other Libyans.
Yep.
And he ends up turning on Airwolf, can't figure out how to turn on the guns, so Hawk does his Airwolf karate and takes them all out.
Yep.
And then I love the scene in the courtyard when they finally take off an Airwolf and they blow everybody the damn hell away, including like four tanks.
Yeah,
they just destroy them all in that courtyard. It was a really cool scene.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the money they put in the show, you can really see every dollar that they spent for 1984
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's really, that scene was really effective.
That did get the Airwolf weenie vibrating when it's taken off.
Oh, yeah.
And makes the badass like, oh, yes. noise. And, yeah.
Or what that noise is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great.
It's like a, yeah, like a screeching.
Definitely not that.
a mechanical Airwolf, scream.
Airwolf's
of
retarded cousin over there. Hell's happening.
That's Sparewolf over there.
Good lord.
So, yeah, they take out a bird in the cabin and then.
In the courtyard.
They go and blow String's cabin the hell up.
Take out the cabin. Take out the eagle.
That would have been weird. This is where the action finally kicks
yeah,
up.
Yeah, finally. The last 5 minutes. Yeah. And Hawk takes off. I couldn't figure out at first how he figured out where Moffat was. Because she takes him. I mean, he takes her out into this giant desert.
Really?
Yeah.
And then.
You couldn't figure it
out. Well, I didn't pay attention the first time that he followed the tracks.
Yeah.
I didn't see that in when Borgnine finally.
They made that pretty obvious in the beginning.
I know, but I didn't notice it when Borgnine finally turns on the little camera.
As many shots as you were worried about the eagle,
right,
they show so many shots of him following the tracks.
Well, I did eventually get that when I rewound it. I was like, oh, okay, now I get it. Yeah. He finds Moffat.
You rewound it? You watched it on VHS?
I did. I did. That's why I have my VCR in here. I found an old VHS copy of it, recorded from USA. And so he follows him out there.
Followed
and then,
by copies of Up All Night.
USA Up All Night. And Moffat has left Lady in White 2 out in the desert to die. He takes off on his own, thinking somehow he can flee Airwolf, even though he knows exactly how fast it is.
Yeah, exactly.
And that it can track him just about anywhere.
Right.
And he pulls out his little revolver and tries to shoot Airwolf.
First, you have the very emotional scene of String going down there. And
That's right. He finds out that Lady in White 2 is dead,
yeah,
of course.
And he's like, you promised me you wouldn't die, you lying bitch.
And like the scene that is shown in all of the intros to Airwolf is... L.A. Borgnine running out there with a canister of water that says Airwolf on the side of it.
Of course.
I do appreciate the fact they took time to brand the water.
Thank goodness.
Why wouldn't you? She dies of dehydration, assumably, and, you know, whatever else Moffat did to her.
But that's when you see Angry String going back to the Airwolf, and that's when the theme kicks on. And that's when you know it's about to get badass.
Yep.
Exactly. Airwolf takes off and goes like, and then he uses...
Your interpretations of the sounds and themes are not what I recall.
I never said I was a Foley artist. I'm not the guy from Police Academy that can imitate sounds effectively.
So then you have like the whole Libyan army going after Airwolf, who's also chasing Moffat at this point.
Right, exactly. He has to take all those other gunships out and stuff like that. And then he finally catches up to Moffat.
In a lot of badass ways.
Yeah, sure. And finally catches up to Moffat, and Moffat tries to use his little pea shooter against him.
It's kind of like the end of the first Batman where Joker has the long ass revolver.
It's pretty much like that.
Yeah.
There was a throwaway line somewhere earlier where what's his name Jr. was asking him, does it have any weaknesses?
Yes.
And he says the one weakness is the fuel line.
Right.
Yeah.
The mid-air refuel line.
But
you shoot a bullet through there, it'll blow the whole thing up.
Right. And he never gets a shot off. And Hawk uses every bullet in the arsenal of
pretty much, yeah. He pretty much drains
Airwolf. He doesn't fire the chain guns. He just launches the missiles at him.
Well, he launched
no
every
missile
and destroyed him. Yeah.
Well, he kept pulling the trigger. I thought he was out of bullets, too. So.
Well, he was out of missiles.
Out of missiles. I wonder if he sent the nuclear-tip missiles also after him.
He might have, if they had it at that point.
Yeah. Well, that's what they said.
They were nuclear. Yeah,
he had the nuclear-tip Shrike missiles.
Yeah.
That was the little thing on the bottom.
Well, he sent everything from the bottom out at
him. Okay, so then he hit him with nuclear weapons, too.
Trying to click him.
So he just irradiated the desert, apparently.
Perfect. And himself.
Yep. Yeah. And then after that, just cuts back to the cabin. Eyepatch has returned the artwork to the
asking
cabin.
Asking for Airwolf at that point.
He wants Airwolf, and Stringfell Hawk says, no, I'm going to keep it for myself.
He gives him like a dossier of stuff on
St. John,
and then he says, "This is a bunch of crap. This isn't enough." Blah blah blah.
Yeah, and
I'm just going to hang on to it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to hang on to Airwolf. And Eyepatch says, "Well, if you keep working for me, I'll because the government's now coming after him, after Hawk." And so he says, "I'll keep the.
Supposedly.
I will tip you off. I'll give you just the tip about where they're going to attack you."
Right.
Although everybody knows where this guy lives, so why wouldn't they just come attack his cabin and take him out?
There's like one. Or capture him and then torture him until he tells him something. There's like one episode of people that are bad that have infiltrated the government trying to get to Airwolf from him. But like other than that, there's no in the entire first season. There's no real indication that the government is on his tail trying to come after him.
Because why would the government care about this particular piece of technology?
Why? Why would
it's
they?
Not a, yeah.
Technically, it's not owned by the government.
That's
it's owned by. The firm that was trying to sell it to the government.
But even though they're a part of the government.
Yeah, but they were... trying to sell it to the government. So obviously they're not fully a piece of the government.
Weird. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a little strange anyway.
Yeah. And yeah, so they strike up a deal, and that's the end of Airwolf pilot episode. And Q,
pretty much,
JMV ear fucking the eagle again.
Yes,
for the fourth and final time. For
yes,
the eagle doesn't trust him enough to ear fuck him yet.
For the final 30 minutes of the episode, we get a cello solo.
Bonus features, all cello.
It seems to be often the same fucking tune as well.
Yeah. Oh, it's the same song every time.
I don't know, every
time. And almost in the same eagle shot.
It's the same eagle shot.
Yeah, pretty much.
The eagle does the same tricks. Yeah. At one time, he does catch a fish.
That's true, yeah.
He catches a trout that ate his parents.
That was a very expensive shot.
It was.
Which we did not discuss earlier was one of the most ridiculous things between Lady in White 2 and him, where he catches a trout that she thinks is too beautiful to eat, but she's fine eating hamburgers.
Oh, my God. And then she's like, "You're going to throw it back," and then cuts to him eating, and she's like, "I can't believe you killed that beautiful fish."
And you're
like,
eating it in front of me.
The fuck do you think fishes are for, lady?
Yeah, exactly.
And, oh yeah, and then he's like, "Oh, you only like the ugly. You want to eat the ugly fish?"
Yeah, exactly. So
I guess she likes pretty fish and
flounder. That's an ugly fish.
Soul and flounder.
So
she puts the ocean in the basket. All right.
Why don't you just eat steak?
On that
There's
note,
none of that happening. I don't know why you think he's a Cagney character.
Say. He's a Migsy Cagney.
Oh my God. Dear God.
And on that note, we'll get to some fun facts after this.
Or not so much.
Secret is revealed when innocent-looking vehicles and ordinary men become an awesome fighting team. It's the secret of Mask, where illusion is the ultimate weapon.
You're under the microfilm.
Mask vehicles, each sold separately with action figures.
Nothing can stop me.
Switchblade attacks.
He's out.
Rhino retaliates. Sato creates a diversion. Rhino reveals its hidden firepower.
Gotcha.
Mask, where illusion is the ultimate weapon.
Hi, I'm Ron Hashir, host of USA Up All Night.
And I'm Gilbert Gottfried, host of USA Up All Night.
I'll show you lots of fun movies.
I'll show you lots of fun movies.
I do it Friday.
I do it Saturday. We both do the same thing. Only different.
USA Up All Night. The same, but different.
Saturday at a special time.
Somebody's trying to punch my ticket.
Hawk runs for his life from a hit team. But who's trying to kill him? Lover, friend, or foe?
I'm Maria Shriver. A look at the impact of the Vietnam War on baby boomers and a talk with actor Lee Marvin tomorrow on the CBS Morning News.
So let's get to some fun facts about Airwolf.
Gosh, that was barely English, but yeah, I'm following.
Fun.
It was said in a...
He said it very much like
Jan Michael.
I'm trying to do my best Jan Michael Miggs impression. So not much in the way of reviews on the show, surprisingly.
Oh, really?
Out there, yeah. IMDb, they give it a 7.6 out of 10.
Whoa.
Yeah, which is pretty low for IMDb.
Metacritic seems high to me.
Metacritic had no score, and neither did Rotten Tomatoes. But I did want to read one review I found on IMDb that I thought was hilarious. This is from one of the users. It was written in May of 2006 from Catherine Grace Zay.
They don't have Mark in the name. They're not official.
That's true. She said, "I used to watch the show when I was a little girl. Although I don't remember much about it, I must say it was a pretty good show. Also, I don't think I've seen every episode. However, if you ask me, it was still a good show. I vaguely remember the theme song. Before I wrap this up, I'd like to say that I always remember the show in my memory forever, even though I don't think I've seen every episode. Now, in conclusion, when and if the show is ever brought back on the air, I hope that."
What the fuck?
Yeah, that's a good...
Thank you for reading that for
us. Yeah, just a gem of a review. Should be on RogerEbert.com. Go right for the New York Times. Grace Zay.
Okay.
He should pretty much, yeah. She should take over for Roger Ebert.
Yeah, she should be in the new Roger Ebert, for sure.
Yes. I like the show, but I don't think I've seen it all.
Yeah.
I don't remember much
about
it.
I hope that.
So yeah, this show came about because, as we mentioned earlier, the success of the 1983 Roy Scheider film Blue Thunder,
or Shatner.
Yeah, it was a movie about an advanced tech helicopter in the not so distant future that was an LAPD, a militarized LAPD police state, and Scheider was the co-pilot for the surveillance helicopter. So because of the moderate...
Sounds a little bit like Viper.
Yeah. It wasn't like...
Actually.
It wasn't a like huge success, Blue Thunder, but it was enough of a success that it spawned a TV spinoff in 1984. And at the time, because of that, there were two other shows that... helicopter-based shows that were produced as well. Airwolf, of course, is one we're talking about. The other was Riptide, which was about a private detective agency in a marina with a robot and a helicopter called the Screaming Mimi. It also ran for 3 seasons and 56 episodes. I had never heard of that show, Riptide.
What's it called? Riptide?
It's called Riptide, yeah.
Weird.
Ran for 3 seasons, 56 episodes. So it ran almost as long as Airwolf did, the original run at least.
It's crazy.
And there was also a helicopter show before all of this called... Whirlybirds was actually the one that ran from 1957 to 60.
Oh,
so they had a show that was based on the same theme.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So the show was originally going to be a spinoff of Magnum P.I., which Donald Belisario, who created Airwolf, also created Magnum P.I. And there was an episode called Two Birds of a Feather in 1983 that was supposed to serve as the original pilot for Airwolf.
Yeah.
And it was about... It starred William Lucking, which I know the name, but I can't figure out his face, and I didn't bother to Google it. But he was an ace combat pilot who crashes his plane into Magnum's Hawaiian estate. He says accidentally. Magnum rescues him, and then it's up to Magnum to prove this pilot's innocence. So somehow this was going to be a backdoor pilot for Airwolf, but CBS didn't like the concept, so but Belisario had to go rework the pilot.
That's kind of... I mean, that could have worked, I think, with a little bit of cross-promotion.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where you would have gone with it, but I don't know.
I don't know how...
I like the idea of tying it into an existing hit show that right. and kind of helping launch it.
Yeah. It could have been interesting, but they didn't like the concept, so he reworked it and became Airwolf and as a result of Blue Thunder. And the whole thing was based on... Belisario himself was a Vietnam-era pilot, a helicopter pilot. So this is kind of where his fascination... Like, he added a helicopter to Magnum P.I. so they could travel between the islands easier. He had Airwolf, obviously, and... he himself was a helicopter pilot, an amateur helicopter pilot post-war. And I don't think I put it in here, but in one of the quotes I saw from 1984, he said, "I basically created the show so I could play with my toys."
Right.
Because he liked to get up and do helicopter stunts and stuff.
And I just have to note with Magnum P.I., it's just funny how the 80s were just obsessed with Hawaii being this just really exotic, crazy location. You know, just between this and Hawaii 5-0, and I don't know. Just like, oh, it's so crazy.
Have you seen the Riptide helicopter by chance?
I've not.
It looks awful.
What does it look like? Is it like one of those little pontoon helicopters?
It looks like a rescue helicopter or something like that. It's not it's not even like a cool battle helicopter or anything. It just looks stupid.
Yeah, it looks...
Who would want that? Oh, cool helicopter, man.
See, that's the thing. Even though the Whirlybirds was from the 50s and 60s, it was actually based on Bell helicopters, the original versions at that time, which obviously Airwolf is based on a later version of Bell helicopters.
Well, of course. Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the things we were in that era in the 80s of the super vehicle shows. So you had Knight Rider. A-Team was kind of a super vehicle. Ghostbusters, obviously, you had Ecto-1 was its own super vehicle. Airwolf.
Viper.
Viper was in the 90s. It was a latter-day super
vehicle. That's all right, Viper.
First Batman.
The first Batman, yeah.
Yeah, late 80s, sure.
It was kind of that era. I know there were other super vehicle shows. There was Belisario had another show. I think it was Cobra. Not the based on the Stallone movie. Yeah. It was about a Mustang. It was kind of that... Or maybe that was the parallel to Viper. I can't remember. Anyways, it was that era of super vehicles.
Right. Mm.
There was Blue Thunder, or not Blue Thunder, Thunder in Paradise with the super boat with Hulk Hogan.
That's right.
It was a wonderful, wonderful era, which we should do Thunder in Paradise at some point.
Yeah.
We'll bring Thomas back for all the super vehicle shows.
Exactly.
So the first season originally focused on international espionage, but due to low ratings, the ratings kept tanking. CBS wanted it to be more family-friendly. So in seasons two and three, the show became like apparently almost entirely domestic based. So,
really?
Yeah. In the first season two episode, this is where we get our first regular female character, or maybe the second one, as you said. I hadn't seen the rest of season one. Her name was Caitlin O'Shaughnessy, and she was a co-pilot, Hawk's co-pilot. She was a Texas Highway Patrol helicopter pilot that Hawk saves from rednecks. And the number of
need to get out of here.
The ratings for the youth demo went up, but apparently the ratings overall just continued to decline, which led to the cancellation at the end of season three. And then USA picked it up for season four because they wanted to get it to enough episodes to go into syndication, because you can make a ton of money. Because I think Magnum PI,
I didn't know there was a limit on that.
Yeah. It generally now it's 100 episodes.
Yeah,
really.
Ballpark,
I did not know that.
But that's at the time, I think it was around 88. So they got it to 88 episodes or something, or close to 88, close enough to get into syndication, basically.
Yeah.
And like Magnum PI at the time, it scored a $200 million syndication deal. So that's kind of what they were banking on.
And good God, Lord. Did they run it on USA.
Oh, yes, they did.
Once they hit that.
Oh, Airwolf?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it ran endlessly. They moved the production from Arizona to Canada, and they basically didn't have any access to the original Airwolf helicopter because the original company took it back.
So oh, for just, the USA for, one?
Yeah. So they just reused footage they had already shot.
Oh, my God.
All they did was create an interior. And even then, they used apparently they reused a lot of the interior shots from previous episodes and just re-recorded dialogue over it. So a lot
that's
of
awful.
It went, and they had one third of the original budget. So the original CBS per episode cost was $1.2 million, which in today's dollars, that was in 1984. Today's dollars is $2.9 million.
Now also technically, that's Airwolf 2, not Airwolf.
Oh, because the original Airwolf gets destroyed?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't know why it is. I'm just saying that technically, as far as legal speaking...
Oh, I see.
The 1987 version is Airwolf 2, not Airwolf... Huh.
Interesting.
It's considered a separate show.
Okay. CBS apparently lost $12 million over three seasons of Airwolf.
Oh,
you know, that's funny, though, because God. Even these shows... Like, I don't know what the ratings qualifier is to make it successful, but, I mean, if you look at the CW shows, like... Flash, Arrow, Supergirl, all that. Those cost about $2 to $3 million, about the same as Airwolf.
Yeah.
And they're cranking those out 6-7 seasons. So, I mean, I guess their ratings must be better than Airwolf was, but it just kind of.
Well, maybe, but you got to keep in mind at the time, there were most people only had access to antenna. There wasn't a lot of cable at the time. There were most people only had access to a handful of channels. So, successful in that day would have been probably 20 to 30 million.
Yeah,
people.
True. It's crazy we don't have any numbers on Airwolf episodes.
Yeah, I couldn't find any ratings.
Yeah, I look for that too, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it is surprising that Flash and all those other shows spend that much money.
Yeah, and they only get like, you know, 1.3 million people or something.
Yeah, yeah, and they're mostly made in Vancouver and Toronto, I think.
That's true, yeah.
So their costs are even lower. In the last season of Airwolf, so apparently in the first episode, there's an explosion that kills off Borgnine. You don't actually see Borgnine.
It's a body
double from the back. Apparently, there's an explosion. They're testing it. Him and his niece Joe Santini are testing a new helicopter. The explosion kills Dom. Yeah. So Joe Santini takes over Santini Air and becomes the new co-pilot for Airwolf.
Hmm.
There's no mention of Caitlin. She's never mentioned at all.
They couldn't get the same actors. They switched networks.
Yeah, they fired them all. J. Michael Vincent shows up for the first episode, and they basically fire him. He's put into a coma and never comes back to the show.
Yeah.
Even though he's used for all the bumpers for the show, the USA
That's
bumpers.
That's hilarious.
And St. John, St. John comes back, and he's apparently been working deep undercover for the CIA the entire time.
Hmm.
Since the 60s.
Flying Airwolf. And another Airwolf.
He comes back to fly Airwolf, takes over for his brother. And
it sounds awful. I'm sure that season is so terrible.
I'm sure it is.
Just show Jan Michael Vincent in a hospital bed with a bubble over him with an eagle flying. And
he's now flying Airwolf.
Yeah.
Does he also have the cabin where he plays a cello for the eagle?
I'm sure he does. Maybe he plays a violin.
I don't know. The same footage of the same eagle.
Yeah. I'll confirm that in a couple of weeks.
They just Photoshop St. John's face over Jan Michael Vincent's face.
They don't own the cabin spot anymore.
Pretty much.
And the CG is probably great for the time.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. And I should mention, as we mentioned earlier, St. John St. John is played by Barry Van Dyke, Dick Van Dyke's son. Which I think he also worked on the original Battlestar for a while.
Hmm.
And you never find out about the fate of Stringfellow after that. He's
just in a coma.
He's in a coma, and he's sent to some top secret firm hospital, and that's the end of Stringfellow.
Oh, we find out his fate.
Real life, yes.
Yeah.
God, you got to bring it real.
So
it's almost the same.
I think this is a fun fact. In the German broadcast, Stringfellow's name was changed to Huckleberry.
Why?
I don't know.
So it could be your Huckleberry?
I guess so.
I know he liked Tombstone.
Yeah, exactly. Before it came out.
Here's where things start to get dark. So
yeah.
I will say the show has a pretty dark past. So J. Michael Vincent's original stunt double was killed in one of the Airwolf stunts. So he was burned alive in a helicopter crash.
It's just like the Stringfellow Hawk character.
Yes,
everybody that's around dies.
Exactly. So his stunt double died in a crash. The original Airwolf, once they took it back, the company...
Ernest Borgnine, now dead.
Exactly.
That's true.
Alex Cord's probably dead.
Actually, Alex Cord's still alive.
Okay. He's going to die at some point. So. Yeah.
Well, that's a good point.
That'll be at some point. That'll be the J. Michael Vincent curse.
Finally killed Alex Cord. Airwolf was a modified Bell 22 helicopter that originally cost, with the mods, $1.5 million to make. They apparently changed the nose, and of course they added all the fake guns.
Yeah.
They had to get special permission.
Fake? Uh-uh.
I think there's the paint no job was a little different and stuff too, which, whatever.
They had to get special permission from the FAA to fly with the weapons out, even though they were fake. once they sold the helicopter, though, private company that owned Airwolf sold it to a German company, and it became a helicopter ambulance and was renamed, given, you know, new titles and all that.
Yeah.
And
they should have kept it Airwolf. That would have been badass.
Why not? Yeah. I mean, it could have been they took around the Dukes of Hazzard cards and Knight Rider cards. It
works,
everywhere.
Right?
That's true.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in 1992, original Airwolf was destroyed in June of 92, killing all three of its occupants due to fog.
They were in fog. Yeah.
Yeah. So Airwolf is no longer with us, RIP.
Yeah.
Part of the giant Michael Vince curse.
Vince is super sad.
He even killed Airwolf.
Yeah, he killed Airwolf too.
Jesus.
The iguana's going to outlive everybody except John Michael Vince.
That's amazing.
In 2012, an Indiegogo fund was created to produce a documentary. They were asking for like $8,500. They got $9,500. But that documentary has never been produced.
They were asking for $8,500?
$8,500, yeah. The furthest they went was a 5-minute trailer, and that's it.
Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. It's on the Indiegogo site still, but I didn't bother to spend 5 minutes.
What a great... It sucks because all the people in it are dead now, really, or practically, like Jay Michael.
Except he's The Walking Dead, basically.
That would be a fun documentary, though, I would think.
I can't believe they were only asking for $8,500, though.
It was somebody in a garage going to put together bullshit.
I'm sure.
The best, like the hidden scenes or the behind the scenes and the DVDs or some shit like that.
Just recycled Airwolf footage. That'd be real. And cello solos and
of course
it is pretty badass that I don't do you have the Airwolf specs and any of your fun facts here?
I don't think so.
Just the fact that it could outrace conventional jets, travel halfway around the world, and attack with devastating results. And its impressive assets included a cutting edge computer, quote unquote, high tech surveillance systems, and 14 firepower options.
Of course.
it is funny they could fly halfway around the world and back in a helicopter. Yeah. No problem.
You know, I feel like we only see two firepower options. Yeah, the whole time.
That's true. Yeah,
that's a good point. Well, the sunburst. You have the
sunburst on a firepower. That's a counter.
That's true.
Maybe they're counting that as firepower in that. Yeah, guns and the fucking missiles. So that's about it.
So let's talk about the actors before and after Airwolf. J. Michael Vincent, of course, had a very notorious career and is notorious for his alcohol and drug abuse problems. So,
which is interesting because one of the other fun facts I saw was that Ernest Borgnine was amazed at J. Michael Vincent. Like, he said Borgnine would have to look over his script over and over again and rehearse it and actually practice it. He said J. Michael could come in, look at it once, and like nail it.
Yeah,
time.
Apparently he had a photographic memory. He'd read a script once and be done. Of course, it's not like he had a lot to say.
I know, but still, relative to obviously what he was doing to his
true,
yeah,
what he's done with his body or was doing at the time.
Horror.
Yeah.
So we got JMV got a start in the California National Guard when he was discovered by a talent agent for his looks. His first film was The Bandits with Robert Conrad in 1967. He went on to do TV appearances like in Dragnet and The Banana Splits. I think it was a kid show at the time. And then he did full frontal nudity. It's a fun fact. In the 1974 movie Buster and Billy, if you want to say his Airwolf Wang. And
I see Dustin putting that on his phone right now.
That's right.
I'm Google imaging it right now.
He's going to airwolfwang.com. And then he got the starring role in a few
series.
What a
series. Specific website.
It has one photo.
Basically one photo.
We should start that.
I'm sure it'll be great for us. Yeah.
In the 80s, he had a few starring roles on new TV shows that didn't really go anywhere until he was cast for Airwolf. And because he was considered such a talented actor, he got the highest pay of any TV actor up until that point in the history of TV, and that was $200,000 per episode.
That's pretty good.
The first season was 14 episodes, I think.
Sure.
So.
At least 12.
At least one.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about for the first episode. Yeah. That dude was a millionaire. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, first season.
J. Michael Vincent had notorious drug and abuse problems throughout Airwolf's run, and it
actually
was part
multi-millionaire.
Maybe they shouldn't have paid him too much.
That's true.
They paid him too much.
It was part of the reason for Airwolf's cancellation. I mean, it wasn't enough that they were just losing ratings. He was a bit of a troublemaker. He didn't work much after his drug and alcohol problems, and he retired after the 2003 film White Boy. Never heard of it.
No, me neither.
Interesting.
So, fun fact about JMV, as we mentioned, he's an alcoholic and a fan of intravenous drugs and abusing women. So,
that's a fun fact.
In 77, 78, and 79, he was arrested for cocaine possession 3 times. In 84 and 85, he was arrested for 2 different bar fights. In 86, he was acquitted for a felony assault charge for assaulting a woman. But his attorney convinced the jury that she had just tripped over a phone cord in his house.
Oh, no.
In 88, he was arrested for drunk driving. In 1998, his wife left him and got a restraining order against him, saying he'd been physically abusing her since 1986.
Oh, no.
In 2000, an ex-girlfriend got a $374,000 judgment against him for beating her up so bad it caused her to miscarry. That same year, he also violated his probation by appearing drunk in public 3 times and assaulting his fiancée, for which he spent 60 days in jail.
Good Lord.
Another fun fact, in the 1990s, JMV was in 3 different collisions, and he barely survived each one. In the 1996 one, he broke 3 vertebrae in his neck and sustained a permanent injury to his vocal cords that left him with a permanent raspy voice, which we'll hear shortly.
Pretty raspy.
Another fun fact, in 2012, Jan-Michael Vincent lost his right leg, and it was amputated below the knee after he contracted a leg infection as a result of complications from peripheral artery disease. So apparently there's a shrinking of your veins.
Based on drug use?
That I don't know. That would have required more research, which I didn't do.
Yeah.
And in fun fact, in 2014, he owed the IRS over $70,000.
Oof.
So in 2016, an Australian breakfast show caught up with Jan-Michael Vincent.
It's very weirdly named, but yes.
That's what they call them over there on the opposite side of the world. They call them breakfast shows.
It's very weird.
It's like they're Fox.
Do you have any stats on how popular Airwolf was in Australia?
I have no idea.
Because it's very weird that Australia would pick this one American show to hone in on.
Well, I think it was because he did a movie called Big Wednesday in the 70s that was a real big hit in Australia. It's a surfing movie.
Okay.
And I think it was the anniversary of Big Wednesday. Of its original release, and it wasn't really
for Airwolf.
Yeah, I don't have it mentioned. I don't have the part in here about they talk about Gary Busey and whatever. So I think that was all part of it because she calls him the very loud Gary Busey. Yeah. Remember him,
Busey?
This reporter she's very talking down to him at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got a couple of minutes here of Jan-Michael Vincent talking to this Australian reporter, and you can hear his wonderful voice.
How did you get discovered? Do you remember how you first got into acting? Did you audition?
I can't recall.
You can't recall. You had an accident, didn't you? A car accident.
Recently?
Or some time back.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a bit hard to remember things, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Because you nearly died, didn't you?
Yeah.
But the doctors brought you back, thankfully.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about it?
No.
Which is good, probably.
At 71, Jan-Michael Vincent's Hollywood days are well behind him. He lives a quiet life with his wife Anna in Mississippi. And after a lifetime of hard knocks, he admits he's lucky to be alive.
No, I'm just laying low.
Laying low?
Jan-Michael Vincent was a piece of shit, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes, he was.
Not exactly what you're saying.
He was a low-down, dirty piece of shit, wasn't he?
It's not super great.
Cue the sad piano.
I know. No kidding. With the fucking violin. Man, should have at least had his cello part in there or something.
That would have been better. Yeah, so he still exists. Getting the iguana.
That was 2012, right?
2016.
God, just imagine how much more fucked up he is today.
Yeah. Living off that Airwolf money, I guess.
If he owed the IRS $70,000 not that long ago, I'm sure he's probably not. By the way, we forgot to mention that that's what Mark's IRS statement's going to look like. His W-2 is going to be this year.
That's true. I'm also going to cut off my leg.
W-4.
Well, you don't have to do that. You don't have to go the exact
way. Why do you have to do that? Is that like a plea to them? Like, please don't take anything else?
You got an IRS bill, cut off your leg and get forgiven. Get an iguana leg.
I don't know if that's how he got out of it.
I'm pretty sure that's not how he got out of it. That's a good guy.
Look at me, now I have an iguana leg.
Please don't find me owing you $70,000.
You can't take money from me.
His voice is right. His voice, and also, we only heard so much of that interview, but... His mind is not there anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Anymore.
No, it's fine. So that's like, why she's like, you have an accent. You don't know what I'm saying, do you?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if you could really hear it that well over the audio, but like, she asks him point blank, you had an accident, right? And he's like, recently? Like, yeah. No. Yeah. Crazy fuck. She's and leading up to, why are you fucked up like this?
And if you watch the video, too, it's kind of weird. It looks like he has one blue eye and one brown eye.
Probably from the accident, man. That one eye, I bet it doesn't work super well either.
Maybe. Maybe he's got dog blue eye.
It sucks, man. He looks... It's very sad to see him in that.
So in the next episode of The Pilot Project, we're all going to take a road trip to Mississippi to visit J. Michael and ask him all about his accident.
That's true. You had an accident, didn't you? Okay, we all had to speak like Australians.
No, I'm good.
Exactly. You're coming whether you want to or not.
Recently.
Oh,
yeah.
You're going to come and dance for him.
Exactly.
After I ring the doorbell.
Do you remember him like Lady in White 2 from the pilot of Airwolf?
What?
What?
What's an Airwolf? You're a whore.
Ernest Borgnine, who played Dominic Santini, he worked for over six decades in TV and film, starting in 1951. He originally started out in the Navy from 1935 to 45, of course, serving during World War II, working on an anti-sub boat.
Indeed.
And after World War II, he's so put out by war, but he didn't know what else to do. His mother suggested that his personality was right for the stage, so he eventually landed his first role in 1951 in the movie The Whistle at Eden Falls, and from there he went on to have a very prolific film and TV career. He went on to star in the 1962 show, McHale's Navy. He was the star of that with Tim Conway.
It's and like then, his naval experience paid off later in his acting career.
He returned to TV in 1982 for an episode of Magnum P.I. as a wrestler. And this led into his role in Airwolf as Santini. Belisario hired him as a result of that. And it is a fun fact that...
Also known as L.A. Borgnine.
L.A. Borgnine, that's right. He was 70 years old.
Led to a very famous nickname.
Yeah. When he filmed Airwolf, he was 7 years old.
Seven?
70.
Oh, okay.
70.
I was going to say.
Are you serious?
He was 70 years old.
God. Yeah.
After Airwolf, he continued to make TV appearances in shows like SpongeBob, Pinky and the Brain, and ER. He was on the series finale of ER, for which he received an Emmy nomination. And in 2012, he died of the Jan Michael Vincent curse of kidney failure at 95 years old.
Speaking of Are You Serious, yesterday was Pants Off Dance Off's birthday.
All right.
Jody Sweetin. There you go. That's the break room quick hit.
Yeah. Which star?
The break room quick hit.
Which star? Fun fact.
No, that's a different quick hit, different Full House performer person.
Still
like,
the Full House
come
family.
Come on.
Fun fact, Borgnine won an Oscar in 1956.
His portrait taken in the France Popular Place.
He won an Oscar in 1956 for the movie Marty, and like I said, he got an Emmy for his appearance on ER. Another fun fact, Borgnine was married 5 times, the shortest of which was to Ethel Merman and lasted only 42 days.
God.
And
but at least he didn't beat any of them.
That's true.
That's very true.
As far as we know.
That we know,
well,
yeah.
As far as we know.
I'm going to assume he didn't.
The last fun fact for Borgnine
L.A. Borgnine wouldn't do that.
L.A. Borgnine really loved to masturbate, as he declared when he made an appearance on Fox and Friends in 2008.
You're 91 years old. You look fantastic. You look like you're in your late 60s, early 70s. What's the secret?
I don't dare tell you.
No me. You don't need me.
I masturbate a lot.
Okay. thank you, Ernie. That was great.
I actually heard that.
Ernie, have you ever been on YouTube?
Oh my God! I don't think back in the break room. I don't think we played that whole clip before.
No, we never played. It was too long.
Where? That's hilarious.
I actually heard that.
Everybody That's loves the masturbation apparently in there.
Who doesn't?
I just shook his hand.
Oh, I actually heard that.
You never had your hand on your dingus before, guy. Come on.
Maybe he's a hip peer. He just puts his fists on the sides of his hips.
He just thrusts in the air.
Yeah.
Fuck peeing like you never touched it before in a sexual manner.
Nope.
He's good on Lord. Fox and Friends. No, he doesn't.
That's right.
That's a good conclusion. Actually.
God never wants you to touch your peen, even to pee.
Only the wife.
Alex Cord, who played Archangel, eye patch, got his start in TV westerns in the 60s and 70s, and went on to guest star in various TV shows until he landed Airwolf. After Airwolf, he didn't work much, but he did appear in Simon & Simon, Murder, She Wrote, and Walker, Texas Ranger.
Now, this is a guy we could go visit.
That's true. He is now retired.
Best here.
That's right. Fun fact, he now lives in Fort Worth, Texas, which is
there
just
you go. I was in Fort Worth 40 yesterday.
Minutes away. That's a pal. Why didn't you go see Archangel?
That was a brag.
Didn't see him while I was there.
Apparently, he raises horses, and he's
This guy could travel to Fort Worth.
Big money.
You guys don't have cars.
He's a big fan of Westerns, and he often makes appearances at Western film festivals.
Very generic. So, okay.
Fun fact.
Western film festivals.
Yep. I don't know.
What does that even mean?
I guess they show Western films.
Probably not South by Southwest.
They probably
it has West in the title, so there you go.
They show, I don't know.
Western film festivals? What the fuck?
Unforgiven and... Shane.
They're specifically for Western movies.
I think that's what they are.
That's so weird.
He's like a Western film buff. Yeah. Huh. Would you give one shit? You mix it?
Maybe one.
All right. Shows that appeared in or premiered in 1984. Riptide, as we mentioned, who was another helicopter show. Blue Thunder.
We talked about that.
Night Court, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, Danger Mouse, Voltron, Muppet Babies, Punky Brewster, Who's the Boss, The Cosby Show, The Transformers, Miami Vice, Charles in Charge, The Three's Company spinoff Three's a Crowd, and Dave Coulier's Out of Control on Nickelodeon.
So how many of those have has the Pilot Project show, podcast, whatever the fuck, actually done in that list?
I don't think we've done any of those.
No, we haven't done any of those.
Time to get on it.
I was thinking we could tackle Blue Thunder.
There's plenty of non-successful shows in that list.
Well, Blue Thunder only lasted 11 episodes, so we should definitely tackle that one.
Danger Mouse, Muppet Babies, Punky Brewster, can't do any of those.
I mean, that's
Blue Thunder happened the same year?
Yeah, same year.
Man.
Who's Ran the boss? Episodes.
Airwolf really tagged fucked that one in submission.
That's right.
Indeed, Cosby Show.
That's right.
There's a lot of these that we probably couldn't cover. Charles Charge is probably successful.
That was in that first season where he worked for a completely different family than all the rest of the seasons.
Good point.
The Pembertons.
Yeah.
Shows ending in 1984, Auto Man, which is one we'll probably cover, Three's Company, Captain Kangaroo, After MASH, which was the MASH spinoff, Fantasy Island, and Blue Thunder.
After MASH, that's prime and ready for a fucking podcast fucking.
Do you know who started that?
But then we'd have to deal with something around MASH, which I refuse to. I have to quit the show.
That starred our favorite Martian Manhunter from the Justice League live action.
Oh, God.
There you
David
go.
David Ogden Steers.
There you go. A name no one recognizes.
Well, you would if you listen to this show.
Pilot Project fans know.
That's right. They know about the fat Martian Manhunter.
And so, Kit Lively knows.
Final thoughts about Airwolf.
One final thought, just to throw this in, if you do have access to Get TV, apparently it's still in reruns at 2 p.m. daily.
That's a channel that doesn't exist.
What the fuck is Get TV?
That's a good question. But if you have that, you can watch it at 2 p.m. every day.
Is it an Australian channel? Because I feel like that informs some of the questions we had earlier.
It's some Sony network.
It's a channel where you get TV.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can watch that and Steve Harvey, so there you go.
Steve Harvey, like Family Feud, or the Steve Harvey like show?
The Family Feud and Steve Harvey show.
What apparently. A weird combination of shows.
But I think the Steve Harvey show has actually been canceled now.
Has it? Okay.
So.
Well, we're talking about syndication, right? I mean, Airwolf's not still running these days.
Who wants to watch a syndicated Steve Harvey, though?
I get it. I just think it's funny that you threw out that it was canceled.
Well.
Never thought that would be a question I would be asked.
So is Airwolf, believe it or not.
Well, yeah, but that was in 1987.
Okay.
Well, it shows Steve Harvey and the Jeffersons. A Man and the Steve Harvey Show, apparently, are also on Get TV.
All right, well, any more final thoughts other than telling us where we can find this program?
Well, don't we want people to know?
I guess.
Sure, because that gives us money in our wallet.
We forgot to mention,
go watch Get TV.
There's almost no legal way to watch the show. It wasn't Hulu for a while.
Yeah.
We found it on Daily Motion.
I mean, you can order discs from
Amazon. DVD's about the only way you can get it. You can't get it on Amazon either.
Yeah.
iTunes.
You can't buy a digital version.
You can't get it from Amazon Prime. You can order
the DVDs. Yeah.
The DVDs.
Well, I'm saying you can't download an episode from.
Correct. It's nowhere you can stream it, unfortunately.
I know it was on Hulu as of when we started the show, because I remember putting a link in the document to see it on Hulu, but it's not there anymore.
That's really odd.
You would think it's why wouldn't we want to milk as much money out of this? I guess GetTV put up big money to get the exclusive rights to Airwolf.
Yeah, you can go to Daily Motion and watch a backwards version of
it. Yes, it is literally backwards. It's not in in reverse.
Yeah.
It's the titles are backwards. They flipped the film so that I'm guessing so the automated software wouldn't
find an illegal copy of.
Oh, that's really stupid.
So all the titles are backwards and things like that.
Yeah.
But
you can actually watch it. It's just everything's flipped.
It's just
Well, the subtitles will be fucked up though.
Yeah, that's
true, yes.
So Thomas, any final thoughts since Dustin didn't have any?
I think being someone who's listened to every moment of every episode you guys have done, which I haven't, this is definitely my favorite of the
two you've done.
The two that I've listened to.
The two he knows exist.
I was telling Dustin this earlier, like the nostalgia that Viper did not create in any fucking shape, way, or form, is completely backwards on this one. This one is not only is I find it, it's stupid. You have to suspend a shit ton of reality.
Sure.
That everybody's just letting this helicopter do its own thing. Nobody has any way of following him when he drives out to the fucking mountaintop where it's hidden at. I mean, there's just so much suspension of reality. But it's one of the few shows that I can remember having fond memories of as a kid that I still love as an adult. Like, I burned through the first season in a couple days. I'm really excited about watching the remainder, except for maybe season four. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it through that one based on what I know. But we'll see. I'll try. But yeah, it's a 100% worth watching. I'm not sure, trying to pull upon Dustin's Monster Squad experience, that you're going to go watch it if you haven't seen it before and gone, I'm totally going to be in on this. You're probably going to think it's really stupid. But if you had any... if you have any memory of it at all from, you know, back when you were a kid or back in the 80s or whatever, it's definitely a worthwhile watch.
Yeah, to build on Thomas, I totally agree with that. That I think if you watch this episode as just a standalone episode that you've never seen before, you would say this episode's pretty boring.
Who watches this shit?
It really drags on a lot. There's very limited action. There's a lot of bad plot points in it. It has a lot of criticisms, but... we're probably all three unfairly judging it with our nostalgia, but that's what we do because that's our perspective. And yes, like I mentioned earlier, as soon as the Airwolf theme kicks on, you see old Stringfellow pissed and he's going to track down Moffat. I was like, yes, all excited. I got all like tense and stuff watching it.
Yep.
Like, man, I feel like I'm flashback like 30 years of my life.
And there's not even really any crazy action in that first one. I will say that the action gets better. It's consistent.
Only
more than it was in that first one.
The Libyan army is most of it, all they
a
have.
A little bit
much.
Of Libyan army chasing and him following tracks and then blowing the shit out of a Jeep and a guy with a pistol.
Right. Yeah.
There's a little bit more in every other episode of the first season of like actual fighting happening that's a lot more fun.
I mean, you're scared that it got blown up when they hit the one missile and Airwolf goes behind the dune and you think it's destroyed.
Oh, yeah. Freaked me out.
Yeah.
I knew that was the end of the show.
I thought that was the end of the show right there in the beginning.
It's when they're going to bring in Barry Van Dyke.
Exactly.
I will say that they do the one thing that's happened from the stupid-ass preview that I don't like at the beginning is in one of the episodes, David Carradine is in it, unbelievably.
He's playing the Kung Fu guy?
No, he's not playing the Kung Fu guy.
He didn't limit,
but they set it up as you're about to watch, there's a second Airwolf, and you're about to watch them square off against each other with Carradine flying the other one.
Yeah.
I was like, holy fuck, I don't remember there being a second Airwolf other than the red one.
Yeah.
And it actually is a simulation.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't see that coming.
It would have been better if it was a Kung Fu crossover.
That would have been awesome.
been
and him
weird.
Hanging himself with a Lemon Witch.
Of course. While ejaculating at the same time.
Not erotic asphyxiating himself.
Not sure what his Kung Fu skills would have done against all the Airwolf guns and stuff.
Kick the nuclear tip missile back into the airship.
He would have kept himself from dying by judo chopping the rope.
That's
if he actually
true.
Had those skills.
Yeah.
But it is like there's lots of stupid. I was telling Dustin earlier, there's a moment where he's trying to. Bring over a longtime operative who now has a wife and kid in Russia, and the kid is offering resistance of, this is our country, we don't want to leave. And he says out loud on tape, if you don't stop giving me attitude, I'm going to bend you over and spank you on the bottom. I'm just like, what the fuck just happened?
Well, you know, we didn't even talk about
terrible,
it.
Terrible audio. I mean, dialogue, but
when Hawk comes back to the cabin at one point, he reminds Archangel that he could have beaten the crap. He could have physically abused Lady in White, too.
Yes.
That's true.
He's like, what do you think? I could have taken that out on her. He was threatening physical abuse against Lady in White, too.
Could have taken it out on her.
And then he ends up punching Eye Patch.
But, he does punch Eye Patch.
But
he
it's like,
saved
the,
it for
again, the.
But I said it for you.
The machismo, but then contrast that with the pescatarianism.
Oh, and contrast that with his real life.
Yeah,
it's really funny.
Very true.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
Good
but
point.
Anyway.
I love the show. I 100% recommend the show. I mean, it's not up to today's standards, of course, but if you look back at it with the lens of 1984, it's awesome. The theme is one of the top theme songs of all time.
100%.
It has been the theme song on my phone for 10 years. I don't know. I feel like the ringer on my phone. I love the theme song. It's up there, like that and Knight Rider, two of my favorite themes of all time.
Disagree.
You can disagree. You're free to do that. I will allow you.
You disagree that they're two of his favorite themes of all time?
I do.
Anyways, great theme song. I you know, for all my grumbling about JMV, I think he kind of suited the role. I mean, it was kind of a gruff.
I think it was perfect for that role.
Yeah.
I don't really necessarily think
he's a great actor, like everybody else seemed to think he was. But I think it was done really
well. Him and Borgnine were both great. Those were great leads for that.
Yeah, I've got no complaints about
Agreed.
It. And, you know, I think it's a great show, and I highly recommend it. So I think we can probably all answer this, but would you like to see this remade? I think it could only be remade as a movie. I think because of the cost involved, I mean, you're talking $3-4 million an episode probably. Would you like to see it remade?
That's not an uncanny thing to think of these of shows in this day and age of fucking Game of Thrones and stuff like that. And granted, that's a standalone.
The CG could cover a lot of this too. Now
that's true.
That they wouldn't have to do all the practical effects.
Yeah. I would love to see this remade. I would love it. I would want it to be done right. I would be very skeptical of it, but I would love for it to be remade.
As long as the spanking bottom line is in the new one. Then yes.
Your God.
No, I think it'd be pretty awesome, actually.
As long as there's an eagle and a cello.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to bring that back.
Of course.
Unless you start out with new characters, you got to bring back the old weirdisms.
Who do you think would make a good string fill hawk? Midriff Elbow or...
Well, and why can
Midriff Elbow? Who the fuck is that?
So I like to call it Idris Elbow.
I think that if we're going to make another television show, it's going to have to be something that's not one of the stars.
Or even a movie. I mean,
something
a
little bit less.
I think it'd be badass as a movie.
Could be. The problem with a movie is you would have to do too much of the origin storyline in it, that it probably wouldn't make a lot of sense, because it is a TV show. Not that you couldn't make a movie. I'm just saying, I feel like you would have to do too much original storytelling before.
Well, my fear with like a super vehicle show like that is... You get into the TV realm, and every episode has to be based around, you have to be able to use the helicopter as
the
primary way to solve the problem.
Sure.
And I think that probably wears thin over 22 episodes.
Well, do we have any super vehicle TV shows that exist today?
Not that I know of.
There's the Voltron animated series on Netflix.
So, beyond animated children shows, do we have any successful? Because Airwolf coming back would not be a children's show. Do we have any successful adult shows?
Not that I can think of.
No, because it just doesn't. The formula doesn't necessarily
work. That's
what
I'm saying.
Anymore.
I think it might work better as a movie. Like if you gave it to Justin Lin, director of Fast and the Furious.
Oh, I agree. That's a good call.
You cast The Rock as Stringfill Hawk.
No, we don't need Beefcake in the front seat.
You cast Jason Statham. As
maybe Jason Statham,
Dominic Santini,
Hawk,
and you cast
It is Fast and Furious.
And you cast
Vin Diesel as the white woman number. What was it? Lady in White number one.
You can make Michelle Rodriguez Lady in White number one.
You know, they could just do a next gen too. Like it doesn't have to
be cool. It doesn't have to be the same characters. Yeah, yeah. It'd be a lot of fun.
Seriously though, if they took it like a Fast and Furious angle, I think it'd be a lot of fun. I think it'd be a really fun movie to do.
Could be. They would have to bring back a revamped version. Revamped version of the same fucking theme song.
Like Grandpa Hawk left me this map to the middle of the desert. Oh shit! There's a military helicopter out here.
It's a 1984 Bell 222.
They probably
but it was way ahead of its time.
I'm fairly confident they call it a 222 and not a 222.
Well, you don't know that.
You're right. I don't know that.
It was the show was called 227. So why wouldn't it be a 222?
I don't know that that's logical, but I'm not sure I can argue that even.
What a TV executive decides to call a show and what is the military slang? I'm sure is not necessarily
Doesn't
the same
matter.
Thing. Doesn't matter.
My concern about the theme song is, though, it would bring some garbage band in, like, have, like, Pitbull rap over the original Airwolf lyrics. Or
make it like a smiling band, like, da 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 da.
Like Panic at the Disco or some crap.
Yeah.
It would have to be done by someone who was a big fan of the show.
They'd probably get Good Charlotte or somebody to come back and do the theme song.
Good Charlotte.
Just have J.J. Abrams do it. He does everything from
remade. Just get Michael Giacchino to do the score and be fine. Giacchino, however you say his name.
Get John Williams to do it.
He's about to suffer from the Jim Michael Vincent curse here.
He doesn't know Jim Michael Vincent.
You don't know that. They're like your best pals.
Anybody that dies, it's Jim Michael Vincent.
What about the billions of people that died before him? Well, that guy's
his fault too.
That some person in that guy's future was going to know Jim Michael Vincent.
He just got Jim Michael Vincent. Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, that does it for another wonderful special episode.
That's why the Romans killed Jesus, because they knew Jim Michael Vincent.
Al Goel.
Gasoline.
High five. High five.
Oh.
The Pilot Project is produced by Mark Hudson and Dustin Taylor. We have new episodes every Friday. Email us at pilotprojectpod@gmail.com or find us on social channels as @pilotprojectpod. Links to subscribe to this show for free and links to the TV shows we watch can be found in this episode's show notes or on our website at pilotprojectpod.com.
Thank you for tuning into The Pilot Project.
I'm loving this show.
We hope you enjoyed the show. See you next episode.